Welcome to the Catbird Speaks, the podcast for the Baseball Prospectus local site covering the Chicago White Sox. We kept the name because it's a cool name. Hosting tonight in Elkhart, Indiana, the place to be is me, James Fegan, the editor-in-chief of BP Southside. I'm pausing not for dramatic effect because I'm literally forgetting what I'm saying. But in Manhattan is Nick Schaefer. Senior writer. Everyone has fancy titles now.
Yeah. I'd like to be chancellor of something soon. If we can figure that out as well, I would take that.
Chancellor of New Brunswick, New Jersey. Nick Shade.
It's progress.
Joining us in unincorporated Arizona colonies, Matt Adams.
Yes, I'm here in the lovely spring training home of the White Sox.
Yeah, we're in spring training. Pretty boring, run-of-the-mill spring training. No one. Adam LaRoche retired about this time last week. Pretty much a little fanfare, nice career. Kind of ended on a sour note, whatever.
I was hoping we were going to try to tire ourselves out on other topics before we got around to the LaRoche situation.
Well, I mean, the LaRoche situation is such that there is a big, roster opening, kind of, in spring training. This is a guy, even though he was bad, probably, due to be DFA at some time in mid-May, was nevertheless probably going to grab a lot of the left-handed PAs out of, or at least the PAs against right-handed pitching, for the DH slot. And now, obviously, El Garcia is kind of unimpeded, and bench roles are kind of out in the open, and there's a lot more room to maybe give him to a bat first guy, like maybe Jerry Sands, than necessarily having to get defensive versatility out of J.B. Shuck and others like him, Carlos Sanchez, things of that nature.
I think it also comes somewhat timely. I mean, the whole thing, other than the PR situation, benefits the White Sox, but
and the money.
Yes, well, that's everything except for the PR situation benefits the White Sox. I know they've been playing Adam Eaton into the field finally a little bit, but this also kind of takes a little bit of the pressure off and allows him to slot into DH a bit when the season starts. I don't know what the exact situation is on the feeling of his arm, if he's more prone to getting hurt by airing it out too much or what, but utilizing him and utilizing Austin Jackson in center field, that LaRoche helped us out there for sure.
Well, I find it amusing that LaRoche quit right when they had finally kind of pushed the roster into a place where he might have had a chance to have his role contained, such that he might actually be helpful. I've written a decent amount about it in the last few days where there isn't, I mean, you can slide Melky to DH and that might, under normal circumstances be a really nice solution or at least put him in DH a lot. But the problem is then, you're going to have either one of Melky or Avisail's gloves in the outfield. It's better than having both of them out there, which is what they did full-time last year. But, you don't have, unless you're really high on Shuck for whatever reason, you don't have a guy where you say, okay, great, we'll just, put his glove out there and he'll hit enough, and then we can hide Melky and Avisail's gloves and I guess you'd have to just bury Avisail, which doesn't seem to be something the team would be interested in doing. Judging from their behavior in the last, few years and the things that they've been saying about him.
So my thing about hiding Avisail's glove and letting him DH more often is, I'm not so sure I wouldn't rather just let Davidson get major league at bats at that point, just because I feel like stance change aside, we know what Avisail Garcia is going to give to us.
Yeah,
I still don't have any confidence in him.
Yeah, I mean, it's the same problem that Vicedo had, and I know that they get compared rightly and wrongly all the time, but it's just, you could tweak his mechanics all you want, but the dude just has no clue what the pitcher's throwing and when, and I don't really, short of him having some sort of epiphany, I don't really know how you can expect to fix that. I mean,
he could kind of sell out for power more, I guess.
Yeah, I mean,
but I was talking with Mal Rubio today. You could kind of probably visit a 25 home run guy who just tried to crush sliders all the time, but he'd probably be a 280 OBP guy, which means he'd be exactly the version of Seattle they eventually ran out of town because that's pretty much the season he had.
Right. But I mean, and then you get to that point where it's like, what is that guy really doing for you? Because you could just DH Melky most of the time, and then you could just put a platoon of Shuck and Sands in left, and yeah, that's like, you know, that's hardly anybody's ideal option. But Shuck is like a good defensive corner outfielder, and he did get he's got a couple seasons where he had a league average on base percentage, which is more than, you know, at least he'd have a clear things that he was adding to the team, which Avisail would just be like the 25 at bats where he hit a home run in that he'd be helping. Does that make sense? Like, why are you messing around at that point?
I guess my question was going to be like, with the roster currently constructed, say your Robin cannot, you know, go upstairs and shake Jerry Reinsdorfer by the lapels and say, you have so much money, do something. You have to deal with what camp. Is there a better setup than just like Avisail at DH? But I guess we're talking about Matt Davidson. And yes, the discontent with Avisail is really runs very deep. I think we know what Matt Davidson, like, he's a guy who can't make contact in AAA, which is, you know, deeply troubling, since I think there was an article about Sands today about his adjustment to, like, if he actually made the major league roster. He was talking about AAA. He's like, I guess I have to prepare for people actually throwing decent fastballs again. And the fact that, like, Davidson is, like, whiffing 30% of the time in AAA and just on spamming, like junk ball all the time is really disconcerting about him. I really hesitant to buy into his spring training optimism.
If you go back,
if we're hoping high-end that Avisail can become an ambush, you know, power hitter and just take some mistakes, I mean, that's essentially what we've seen Davidson be able to do as well. So, I mean, they're on equal footing in that regard.
Yeah, and, I mean, Davidson, you know, it's crazy. It's such a weird trajectory because he was, you know, back quarter, certainly, but he was a top 100 prospect sort of consensus guy. And in 2013, you know, in the PCL as a very, you know, as a 22-year-old, he hit well. And he held his own in a cup of coffee in the majors at the end of 2013. And now, like, 2 years later, two, 3 years later, he's regressed somehow.
And he was as MLB ready as you can get a prospect, and he was still like isn't ready.
It really
he immediately took two steps backwards upon arriving in Chicago.
It's really incredible, and I've mentioned this before, and it's probably just amusing more than anything else. But the White Sox took Tyler Flowers, who when they acquired him was like, this guy sure can hit. Who knows what position he'll play? It won't be catcher, but who cares? Because Lordy, this guy can hit. And I just read his Baseball Prospectus annual blurb today, and it was like, well, you know, whatever he does with the bat is gravy because he's such a good defensive catcher. And I'm like, how did this happen? Like, how are they so terrible?
I mean, Tyler went through that whole weirdness with his swing development.
Oh, yeah, where Greg Walker was like, I got some great tips for you, and he hit like 140 in AAA, and he conspicuously said, screw what Walker told me, and went back to hitting decently. Yeah, that was really something.
I mean, in Walker's defense, what he did, sticking to a swing in the majors kind of like had slowly diminishing returns.
Well, I mean, Greg Walker, wasn't Greg Walker the last guy who had his hands on BJ Upton when he could still hit?
Yeah, I mean, like, Walker never successfully installed what he wanted Flowers to do to the point that Flowers just abandoned it so he would stop, like, getting owned in AA, so...
Like I said, I think it's probably just more funny than anything else, like a tragic sort of way. But
what the White Sox are really missing without LaRoche is kind of a left-handed complement. And from what I can tell, the best left-handed bat in spring for that kind of role is Travis Ishikawa, which is basically to say they don't have a left-handed bat on their org chart.
Yeah, if we're discussing the merits of Davidson over Avisail Garcia, Ishikawa in the mix is not going to help morale at all.
Ishikawa is like this weird, like, you know, you're just resigning yourself to this, you know, really low level of production, but like competence, because I mean, it's really weird. I mean, this says probably more about like the weird other things that were happening, but the last, what was it, 2014, when the Giants won the World Series, wasn't he their like left fielder for most of the playoffs?
He was came up big for them too. He's kind of the poor man's Dan Johnson, if that's depressing enough for you.
Yeah, or like a poor man's poor man's Casey Kochman's knockoff replacement thing.
Well, what's funny about that is that he was in White Sox camp in 2013 and got waived because he wasn't good enough, and that was a historically off White Sox offense.
Yeah, I mean, the dude
didn't catch on anywhere. Dude can't hit all year.
Just cannot hit. So he definitely fit right in.
And now he's older, and he might make the team. Probably not. But
a team that should be better.
Yeah, is better all around. That was a 99 loss team that cut him when he was 29 years old.
Yep. I guess in terms of so we have the internal options, and Sands and Shuck each have, at least they have a skill that they can offer. Because we've definitely had seasons where you have multiple guys on the bench or even in the starting lineup where you're I just don't see any single thing you do. And I guess there's that old managerial philosophy of liking specialists on your bench. Guys where it's okay, well, this dude does this one thing really, really well. And if I ever need that, he's right there. And so, Sands, it's okay, for those situations where they're bringing in Randy Choate against, Alex Avila or whatever it is, and I don't want to pinch hit Navarro for whatever reason, hey, Jerry Sands, you might, crush this lefty. And Shuck is, I guess, pinch runner success in the pinch hitting role, which isn't necessarily the easiest thing to do, on base skills, et cetera. So that's nice. It's nice that you have more room for things like that. But do you see them adding from outside the organization in any way? Because the bar is really low.
We would like to see it. It's just, the bar is low, but what's available, what are people willing to part with, and how soon would they be willing to part with them? If they haven't already been showing interest in dealing guys, which this time of year is pretty rare, unless they're about to have to, DFA someone through waivers, you have to wait a solid month at least to watch a team decide that they are for sure done for the season because they stink before they start to try to move parts. Meanwhile, the guys that are all rumored, we just saw Morneau get, go down with an injury, and now Ethier is dead as well for a good bulk of the year.
Yeah, and it really looked like they were going to need to get rid of one of those guys because they had six outfielders. Now all of a sudden they have what looked like, they got Puig and Wright and two really what could be really cool platoons in center and left now, cause it kind of streamlines things for them.
Well, there's still the positionless Alex Guerrero that they have on the roster. Yeah.
I suppose DH is the place for him.
Hey, we got an opening at DH.
No, it's weird. I mean, I don't know from a PR perspective, if these teams don't care, if they want to wait till the deadline before they, when they think they have more desperate bidders than just the White Sox, having a rotating bench spot at DH. But there are teams in the, there are six or seven teams in the NL who are dead before the season's even started. And theoretically they could be sellers now. Why not? We just saw the Brewers traded their starting left fielder a couple months ago for prospects. So they seem to be willing to do rebuilding type moves. So there could be partners there just by virtue of how polarized the NL is right now.
Well, there's Jay Bruce, who everyone's been talking about for some months now as a possibility, and at least then he wouldn't have to play the field. You said the Brewers, Chris Carter. I'm almost certain the Brewers have Chris Carter just so they can flip him once he gets off to a good start. So
yeah, right-handed, but yeah.
Yeah.
But still.
But that's, better. Again, someone that I don't think it's going to happen right now. We're just kind of too deep into spring.
Why the shit not?
I mean, is there any precedent for it? Have we seen teams like opening day type trades that aren't the Connor Gillespie acquisition type situations?
I mean, feel like the last 5 years has just been teams just shedding all pretenses of not rebuilding and asset stacking. So I don't know why they're just going to be so hot and bothered about it. Especially a team like the Brewers that's run by a really scorched earth, analytics rebuild type.
You know, it's kind of a shame that it is who it is, because I don't know if you could, like, if the fan base would tolerate it, but, like, the only contending team I could think of that, you know, because of the nature of how the sequencing of these acquisitions, like, the Mets have Alejandro Deaza, and they have, like, they acquired him because they didn't think they were going to get Cespedes, and then they did, and now I don't think they know what the hell to do with him.
Let's trade for Deaza.
Yeah, so, I mean,
he's strangely perfect.
Yeah, I mean, like, he fits kind of like, he would be better in left than either Melky or Avisail, and you just put, you know, Melky at DH and, I don't know, send ship Avisail out into, like, an oil rig or something where he might be useful.
bring our shiny hero home.
But it's funny because I'm hesitant to suggest it because I know everyone's going to roll their eyes and be like, oh, God, they're bringing back guys from that era. But meanwhile, it's like last year they brought Gordon Beckham back at this time. And Deaza has actually been good before. So, you know, like the reason why people are sick of Deaza is because they were like counting on him to be a key cog of the team, which he's not really equipped to do. But if you wanted to be your, like, I don't know, your 8-hole hitter and like just play decent defense and left and hit righties every now and then, like, great, cool. That's what he's great at. So, not great, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, there's no rule that he has to end up on the Braves this year like all the other discarded White Sox.
Apparently, when I left off today, Latos was, like, cruising, and it looks like he didn't continue to cruise. It looks like
things... Oh, he got torched.
Yeah.
He had, like, 2 home runs, like, 4 runs total, and then in the post-game interview, he said that he called the entire inning a blonde moment. So the full, like, Latos package was perfect on display.
Yeah, but his strikeout to walk was 4-0, so he's still going to win that Phil Hughes Cy Young Award if he keeps this up.
Spring training FIP is where that cash is.
How much of that do you just chalk up to, like, him turning over a real lineup in spring training over for, like, the third time? Like, did you see enough from him to be like, this is definitely better than Turner and Johnson, or do you not even need to see what he's got right now to know that?
Well, this is his first look, right? Like,
yeah.
That wasn't on the backfield. So,
exactly.
I mean, essentially, this is the outings that guys, I don't know how much they worked up to it. I mean, Chris Sale's first real field outing, he went like 6 innings or something. So, again, you can get plenty done on the backfield, apparently. But usually, you see a lot of guys come and play their first time and throw 2 innings, you know, and go sit down. So, I don't know. You could possibly assign some of it to that, just some conditioning.
And it sounds like, at least from what they made it sound like, was that, you know, Sale obviously didn't really have anything to, like, work on. It's just building up stamina and getting himself to his normal state. Latos, it sounded like they really wanted to, like, tweak his mechanics, which was, I thought that was the purpose of keeping him in the backfields as long as they did.
Well, it's like James wrote about this morning. They kind of already gave up on Johnson, or at least in the immediate... As the season starts, gave up on him.
Maybe sure. Because he looks like trash.
Yeah.
It hasn't looked good since, like, 2014. Or no, 2013.
Well, nor has Latos. But
Latos has had, like, good starts or something like that. Ethan was talking about him today. He said he basically threw, like, a guy whose mechanics look like he's had a knee injury and doesn't, like, extend himself well anymore. So that's a thing to worry about. For the rest of the season.
Although apparently, I mean, maybe not, though. I mean, if Carson Fulmer is just, like, the next, you know, monster they're going to unleash on everybody.
John Cooper's statements are interesting and encouraging. That would be really cool to see if somehow he was able to work himself into the regular rotation and be as effective as Rodon was last year.
Yeah, it'd be nice to not have to, like, draft a member of your starting rotation every single year. But I guess that's where we're at.
Yeah.
22 years old.
So let's say that the White Sox are going to go ahead and assume that he'll be able to slot in easily, 4th spot in the rotation-ish.
That's insane.
And once June rolls around, are they then comfortable enough to draft a actual position player up top?
I think they've been pretty best available. Or it's best, like, for their fit. I mean... You got to consider how the guy's going to fit into your system, and it's only makes sense. They're going to have a lot more natural fits with, you know, college pitchers that they see that they can turn around very quickly and maximize. I mean, I think it's going to be what's available and what fits, and you can't really sweat it too much.
I mean, I feel like we're just now entering the time of year where people start to, you know, slide prospects into, like, where they think they fit in the draft. Like, the draft puzzle's coming together, and there's still, I feel like there's always lots of movement all the way up to the draft. I mean, like, especially with, like, the high school guys who kind of break onto the scene. Because, like, baseball season hasn't really, like, started in earnest in a lot of places, I feel like, for college and high school, certainly. I mean, because didn't Buxton come out of kind of nowhere? I'm blanking on, there was, like, a huge high school prospect that kind of, like, came on, like, a freight train a few years ago in the draft. So
Mike Trout?
Who?
Yeah.
So that complexion, like, guessing bat or arm at this point feels, like, very shot in the dark. There's definitely there's an organizational need, but, you know, I'd like to think they've realized that just chasing org needs in something like the baseball draft is a pretty futile exercise.
Something I'm concerned about, like, how ready Fulmer would be is that Carlos Rodon wasn't really, like, ready when he got promoted last year. Like, couldn't really throw strikes or throw a changeup, and kind of just got by on being able to hit 97 and have, like, a 70 slider.
Yeah, he just brute forced it.
It was really a mess.
Yeah, he
had some good starts before the last, like, 2 months, but he didn't have, like, refined looking starts.
No,
so
I don't know that Fulmer has that much margin for error, but I feel like when Rodon came out, it was like, okay, this guy's fastball command is a mess and he doesn't have a changeup. Whereas Fulmer, it's more like his like mechanics are noisy, and, you know, we don't know if he's going to, like, have the endurance, or if he's going to be able to hold on to his stuff, or if he's going to get injured. I didn't hear as, maybe it's that those problems were the most significant, but I didn't hear as much, like, geez, his command is, like, really shaky. I didn't hear as much of that for Fulmer as I did for Rodon. So, you know, if the issue is long-term durability, like, that's not really going to stop him from getting to the majors quickly. You know what I mean? If the problem is that they don't know if he can hold up, like, multiple years of 200 inning workloads, that's not an issue for 2016.
No, not really.
And if he's added to his repertoire, if he has legitimately added a third and fourth pitch, both of which neutralize opposite-handed hitting, like, damn.
So is he going to be, I don't have any intel, or I don't think I've seen a whole lot of specifics other than in-game spring training results from Jacob Turner. Is that a garbage situation?
Pretty much.
He can't locate his fastball at all, and
it's not that great to begin with.
No, and that used to be his only, like, he was a one pitch guy. It was like, oh, he's got a huge fastball, and maybe he'll figure out some secondary stuff. The Tigers fast tracked him from high school, like, to the majors, and then he got hurt a few times. I wasn't paying a ton of attention to. I wasn't paying super close attention to the detail, but, like, so I'm trying to cover first in a game on Sunday, and he just, like, had his, like, left leg dangling, like, all over the bag. Can't remember who the base runner was, but he, like, gave him a look, like, afterwards, like, what the hell are you doing? You could have just ruined both of our careers. So, like, obviously that doesn't reflect on his pitching, but it doesn't inspire confidence.
I mean, if you get Tim Hudson at first base, it does start to impact your pitching at some point.
Mm-hmm.
Put on the surgery table, and then, like, you're in a cast.
Is that how that works?
I mean, I don't have any big league experience, but that's what I hear.
I don't see what the problem is. Then you have all your friends, like, put their favorite stickers and, like, draw all over your cast, right? That sounds really fun.
Yeah. And,
you know, when you're as bad as Turner has looked, you could go ahead and get injured while on the 40-man, and then they have to pay you and rehab you, don't they?
they just wave you, can't they?
Yeah, can't they just say have fun rehabbing on your own?
Well, wasn't it a minor? I don't know how they.
No, he got $1.5 million guaranteed cash money.
Yeah, he got a major league deal.
We'll get the good training room.
That was a really weird decision.
Yeah, especially given that it sounds like that they really needed that $1.5 million. that was like the gap between Rollins and Alexi. I mean, Rollins might wind up just being better next year anyway, but they had like a $10 million offer to Desmond, and then when he wasn't interested, they spent it on those other guys. It's like they're operating on really thin margins, and then they just took like a $1.5 million flyer on Turner. It seems really incongruous with the rest of everything else.
That was one of the first things they did.
It was so strange.
And so, as long as you're under a certain spend threshold, you can give it to whoever you want. It doesn't even matter.
Yep.
But you just can't top over. You can't give out more than $2 million.
It was like Han did it, and people were asking what's Jacob Turner, really? He's like, it's a negligible amount. See if he has something. And then, he got his, budget passed down from Jerry Reinsdorf. Oh, I made a huge mistake.
Something like that.
So Rollins is probably just opening a shortstop?
Yeah.
I think it looks that way. I mean, Robin's playing his coy game and pretending like he doesn't know. Or he says specifically he does know, but he said he won't tell. But I don't really see how they give it to Saladin. I mean, I guess I can see because he's had a good spring.
He's
but
slugging 800.
I don't know. I go back and forth on it. I know that Rollins might be a problem defensively, but I feel like if you give him a shot to see how much the whole experience carries him through there. When you start seeing things look really bad, then you can think of a switch at that point. I also feel like he might be a bit more fragile about it. And I know that's not something, you should be approaching the game with, should stick to the analytical process in building your roster. But I feel like if you tell him he's going to be on the bench, it'll be more detrimental to his overall performance than if you did it to Saladino.
Yeah, I mean, I think he'd probably appreciate it knowing before the season starts what his role is going to be, more than Saladino will just kind of take what comes. But Rollins did get rave reviews for kind of taking up the mentor position for Corey Seager. Though maybe he just realized the extent to which he was outclassed in that situation.
Yeah, it's one thing to be gracious to Corey Seager, but I don't know how deferential I'd want to be to Tyler Saladino. I guess you do have, Rollins is a true switch hitter. You could basically do a rough platoon with the two of them, and that should get Rollins enough rest, intersperse it in, give Saladino opportunities where he can actually succeed as best he can. If there's a really striking gap in their defense, you could use Saladino as a defensive replacement. I don't know if that would mess with Rollins, but
I don't think so. Any game up late, I feel like it's probably a fair game to do that, and without hurting feelings, since that seems to be of the utmost concern for me right now.
Yeah, so I that actually looks pretty easy.
Well, after the LaRoche thing, maybe be more cognizant of feelings going forward.
Oh my God.
A bit.
We had a good 25 minutes without LaRoche.
That was a really weird episode. Jokes.
So, are there other players that we would want to get rid of that we can figure out some sort of hot button trigger that Kenny can go at to get them to resign and give us back some money?
Oh, I'd say John Danks, but then you freaking need him, evidently. you think you have enough guys for these, back of these positions, the back end of the rotation, and they do not. If Latos is going to be a bonfire, and then nobody else is making any money, so
there was some talk prior to LaRoche's departure about how the White Sox will have finally eclipsed the 2010 salary total.
But 2011.
That's not true anymore, right?
No, it's
that's
not.
That's
not
we know
close.
Now.
No, is it just a clean? They're just doing a clean break. They're not doing a buyout or anything.
Seems like it. I wouldn't know. I don't know if I use the term clean break.
Also, wouldn't a buyout be to try to keep anything from getting out of hand and words to be thrown about? I mean, I think it's past that point.
I mean, right now, their present payroll obligations before you starting adding in like a bunch of league minimum guys is like 110 mil. Like they're going to be at what, like 114 maximum? That's really low. That's other than 2012. I mean, 2012 and 2014 were like salary dump years. So this is putting us back to like before 2011. This is, you know, billions of dollars of revenue ago.
Which is just insane. I mean, I know we beat this into the ground, but I mean, overall league inflation is incredible over the last 5 years, and the White Sox haven't done anything.
No, it's like, and we've seen Reinsdorf do these arbitrary like spending rules before, just because of what he thinks reality should be rather than what it is. And so I could very easily say, I was like, look, you should never have like, you know, you should never have like what the Astros did, but like you should always be between $90 and $120 million payroll, and that's it, no matter what. Like, it doesn't matter what the situation is. That's just how it is. And well, let's see how it plays out.
But they do have a shot. It's not like we're looking at like a garbage team, but it just still has that feeling of it wouldn't take much to do a little more, and that little bit would go a really long way.
Yeah, and unfortunately, even more oddly about the LaRoche thing was just like that they were like 1 week too late on it, because Pedro Alvarez would fit right in on this roster. You just slide right into what LaRoche's role was going to be and actually like do really well.
Yeah, that's what Kenny really did wrong, is he waited too long to kick the kid out.
What if they offered Drake LaRoche Adam's roster spot?
Chris Sale would be appeased, I think.
I don't know if child labor laws would work. Oh my God, I just went to Baseball Reference. It's Dexter Fowler's birthday.
Should have been White Sox.
I know. This is. Is Sanchez just going to be in AAA? Is that just where we're at?
I don't think that you can put him anywhere. I mean, I just don't. Dude, with the flexibility that exists on the infield right now, and you're carrying Saladino, obviously Lowry can slide over to third when Frazier needs to rest, and then you just don't need that extra guy. But as to what we were talking about before, there's that flexibility just because we have a similar situation in the outfield, kind of a four-man outfield flexing into that DH. But Sanchez is just too redundant he's Saladino as far as that goes.
Yeah, and what's, you know, switching over to, I mean, look, when you look more at Baseball Prospectus defensive metrics, they hate Carlos Sanchez's glove, by the way.
Yeah, I was a little bit surprised at how poorly he grades out. I thought that at the very least he was bringing that to the table, you know? And I don't know, I mean, say what you want about defensive metrics, but if you're looking at that much of a tank job, if the numbers are showing it to be that poor, then it's not good.
No, I mean, you worry too about a guy like that, where you start falling into, I'm blanking on the name, but it's like that backup catcher effect where like the worse they hit, the better we assume they are defensively. And it's hard to refute because things like defense are still so squishy and hard to measure. So you worry that you get this reputation for Sanchez. It's like, well, sure, he hits like a pitcher, but like, oh man, that glove, when that may not even really be true. I mean, the guy, you know, he's definitely fighting an uphill battle in terms of his like size and athleticism. I mean, that's like Saladino just looks more capable at short, just because like the guy's just like bigger and stronger and covers more ground.
I also had the prospect moment with Sanchez, seeing him play in spring a few years back and watching his hands and how quick he was able to make throws, and I kind of let that influence a lot of my defensive views on him. It colors a lot of what I think about him, I think. I need to maybe step back from that a little bit.
I mean, there's stuff you can do with, like, there's stuff you can do with positioning, and he's still young enough that it's not crazy to say, like, there's more development in there. I mean, this is his age 24 season, I think.
He's younger.
He'll turn 24 at the end of June. So,
that sounds right.
Yeah, I mean, you throw that dude in AAA, get him another like 300 plate appearances, and then if somebody gets hurt, just bring him up. But then again, he's behind Tim Anderson at that point. So,
well, yeah, if you're looking at shortstop, yes.
Just thinking like middle infield, like depth for the major league level at a certain point, like what your options are, like who's getting hurt where you're like calling up Sanchez ahead of Tim Anderson at that point, like in
June. That's true, unless it's an early thing, in which case I think they're trying pretty hard to hold off on Anderson.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, like, I guess if Saladino gets like hit by a car tomorrow,
that is a harsh, harsh injury.
Well, Kershaw got hit by a car yesterday.
Yeah, was it yesterday or today? I saw the selfie thing where you took.
Yeah. See, if I learned anything from that, you know, car accident is an amusing incident.
It's a lot less exciting, but it's equal possibility that Anderson is up this year. It just like has a lot more potential for just obvious bust and struggle than Carson Fulmer.
I think what I've seen out of Tim Anderson this year is a lot of what I saw out of him last spring, which is there's just certain times where he looks confused or not comfortable. And I mean that defensively. At the plate, I haven't really seen much in any direction from him. It's the defense that I see. There's so many instances that he just looks bad. And there's instances where he looks good, too. He's not always lost, but I just feel like the comfort level isn't there. And it probably has something to do with, you know, him just getting accustomed to everything within the game.
Another option went off the table when Sean Figgins retired. I thought he had retired 4 years ago.
I wasn't aware that he was still officially or technically, whichever, active.
You know, I wrote that thing about how there's only like two other lefty starters who aren't on the White Sox in the AL Central. One of them might be hurt. So Daniel Norris has apparently hurt his back. So it may just be Tommy Malone and then the four White Sox lefties in the AL Central.
That's too bad about Norris. Kind of wanted him to be able to come back and pitch considering what he's been through.
Yeah, no, I'm definitely rooting for Norris, but it's great. I mean, maybe it's just something I never really noticed before, but just how lopsided the distribution of left-handed pitches are in the division. It's obviously something, it's a very small sample, so it's vulnerable to variance, but that's the way it's shaken out. I don't know. It's a shame that they can't grab like the left-handed equivalent of Jerry Sands. I guess that's a much more valuable player because you get get a lot more at-bats out of him, like the Seth Smiths of the world. But I don't know. It's like, is Matt Joyce worth like trying to get your hands on? It's not like the Angels can afford to get rid of him.
Wasn't he like abysmal last year?
Oh yeah, James, find me like a dude I'm going to suggest where you're not going to be like that guy's bad. Because
I don't know, like maybe he's dead.
But like,
I mean, he had a 60 OPS plus last year, so he's dead enough.
Yet he kept his Twitter handle Sweet Swinging 20 the entire time.
Well, maybe he's going until his, you know, WRC is 20.
I mean, if you're really just literally going out there and trying to find lefty bats, maybe as well bring Lars Anderson back into the fold or something.
I mean, I guess bringing Joyce back isn't any worse than Bruce, who has like two awful years in a row.
Yeah, Joyce was fine in 2014. It wasn't great. His slugging like fell off, but he was still like getting on base. I don't know. I'm just like trying to think of who's like freely available essentially at this point. That's why it sucks having this problem in mid-March. Late March at this point.
Well, you know, how do you like offend Adam LaRoche so deeply from thousands of miles away? You really have to do it in person.
Is there anything else to add other than like, you know, we got this back end of the roster sorted out, and I mean it seems like there's no like one elegant solution in terms of a day-to-day alignment. It's just going to be like a matchups rest sort of thing that I guess we're more confident in their ability to do now that it's Rick Renteria instead of Mark Parent. Is everybody else sort of feeling that way as well? Or
I really haven't thought of Rick Renteria a lot. I mean, maybe if he had played some role in the LaRoche conflict, I would have, like, you know, remembered that he's in the clubhouse.
Well, if the manager
it feels like another year where you need like a crazy Mondo year from Abreu and Sale and Quintana to compete, which is kind of like the same, you know, place they've been the last couple of years.
It feels like the supporting cast is better, but maybe that's just that they're all different and they haven't, like, all infuriated me yet.
Yeah, I mean, they could definitely do it. I just, could you, like, equal probability see just Austin Jackson is done, Jimmy Rollins is done, Deonna Navarro is a disastrous defensive catcher, Alex Avila needs to retire because, my God, you're playing catcher and you have so many concussions already.
Yeah, there's, I'm really worried about him.
So much downward potential.
And the defense is still not good. You plugged Austin Jackson in there and that helps, but they are not. They were awful last year and they really didn't do much to change that other than sliding Jackson in at the last minute.
Well, Frazier is an upgrade on what they had at third defensively. If you
better than Gordon Beckham? Goodness gracious, Nick.
Calm down, jeez.
It's only a matter of time before those Gold Gloves Hawk promises are going to start rolling in, right? Ethan was pretty stoked about a play Laurie made at second. I mean, with one play today, but apparently, I mean, like, Laurie's never really had like a whole lot of time to sit at second base and actually get comfortable there at the major league level. And he certainly has the athleticism for it. So there's like reason to be confident there. I mean, certainly if Sanchez is as bad as FRAA says he is, then they had Micah Johnson and Sanchez last year who were like, you know, Johnson's an epic butcher and according to FRAA, Sanchez is like not helping either. And, you know, like you said, you got Jackson and Eaton. You have Jackson's glove effectively replacing Abisail's, which is a pretty gigantic upgrade. You can now do, with LaRoche off the roster, you can do more defensive substitutions much more aggressively. I mean, you can be using Shuck in left a lot more if you want, because there's a place to put Melky. So, you know, there's reason to think that the defense is better at this point. Depending on how you feel about, you know, Flowers is, you know, being able to coach up framing and things like that.
Yeah, I can see what you're getting at there, and especially not taking account enough, taking into enough account, which I still said wrong, that Jackson in center actually pluses up Eaton if he's moving over to a corner.
Yeah, exactly.
On top of that.
You go from having a bad defensive left fielder, below average center fielder-ish and an atrocious right fielder to having like a good center fielder, a good right fielder, and now like if you want to, if it's really like a problem, if you think Melky's defense is a real problem, like I said, you can put him at DH more often if you want.
Is your optimism for the important parts of your core blunted at all by knowing that they apparently socially live on Mars, or did you kind of always know that in your heart?
Well, I mean, Sale being like, Sale's temper has always been kind of like endearing to me because it seems like harmless and strange. Like Eaton, you know, I've been such a huge fan of Eaton's even before he was on the team. He's making it harder, but like, I don't know, Abreu and Quintana are like my guys, and they came through this completely spotless. I mean, can you imagine how tragic it would have been if Abreu started like chiming in on how sad it was to have the kids sent away? Like that would have been like,
yeah. I mean, Abreu, like, perspective—the lack of perspective necessary out of Jose Abreu for that would be just extraordinary.
That would go from like, you know, your teenage son is throwing a temper tantrum because you're out of Pop Tarts to like, I don't know, whatever the saddest thing you ever saw or read happening. Like playing out,
yeah, like Abreu in the newspaper saying, "You know, I'm glad my kid's still in Cuba or something."
Yeah, so like,
thought you were like coming from another angle, like where Abreu is like on Team LaRoche, and you just don't.
Yeah, that's what I meant. Like, if like, how could you send someone's son away? Like, how do you answer that from Abreu? But like from Sale, it's like, oh, what are you even talking about, man? Like,
I feel like Sale just saw the opportunity to get up all up in the face of Kenny Williams and took it.
Yeah, that's probably.
I mean, not to say that that's all put upon. Like, I'm sure he's one of the people that enjoyed Drake LaRoche and was, you know, disappointed at his departure, but I think he definitely took the opportunity to blow it further out of proportion than even his own emotion.
But he even explicitly said, like, he's like, it's not even about, like, the kid. It's about how, it's about like upper management just clumsily barging into the clubhouse and arbitrarily imposing these rules out of nowhere that we don't like. And even even though Sale singled out Ventura for praise, like incidentally, I find that, you know, it's like, it's still kind of damning that he's saying like, oh no, like we wish Ventura had handled this because he's such a cool dude. But like, that's kind of highlighting like, what the hell does Ventura do here?
Yeah, I mean, I really want to defend him in this situation of like, I don't, again, like, and then I fall on this a lot because I don't know what's actually going on. I don't know how many people spoke to Robin. I don't know that Robin is the one that escalated it to Kenny Williams or to whomever. And, you know, this is the way that it was handled. And it ended badly, so I guess no matter what, you still got to say Ventura's got to keep it together, or at least, like you said, keep them from going apeshit afterwards.
Well, like, there's a lot to be said for Kenny Williams just being like, look, I'm not in the clubhouse. I can be the bad cop on this one, right? But it's just, I mean, some of it is just like, take the temperature of the room. Like, at a certain point, management is like, managing, you know, personalities is making an assessment of how you think people will respond to something and what will work and what won't, and having some sort of predictive evaluative power. And it's just frustrating because like, we're always told to, you know, cool it with the complaints about his jarring tactical decisions with like, well, no, but like, oh man, that, can that guy run a clubhouse? And it's like, well, apparently not. So it just makes it hard to hold him up as having strengths. And I mean, even last year, it was one of those things where I would reassure myself, you know, the more I was hearing about the disaster in Washington, like, okay, well, you know, like Ventura is also making boneheaded in-game decisions like Matt Williams, but his players clearly love him and players clearly hate Matt Williams. So like, hey, like, you know, we could be doing worse. But Matt Williams is gone now. And one of Ventura's biggest strengths has been, I don't know, cast into sudden doubt. So
I think this has at the very least given us I guess you could say starting point, even though it's definitely not the start, of if things don't go well this year, Robin Ventura will lose his job. Like, yeah, there's no more anything you can do to save him at that point.
Yeah, I would say so. I do wonder what this would do to like Han's role moving forward as well, in terms of like, okay, like the things Kenny's touching are increasingly not working out. Like,
yeah, who's in charge here? I wonder how many of those discussions they have where he's like, I mean, all along we've heard people say, well, Kenny's still pulling the strings, and what's Rick Hahn still have the freedom to do on his own? I mean, I think we've seen the stamp of his style in a lot of the activities and moves, but I'd like to have a little more like freedom, I think is probably the word. But then you still have Reinsdorf to deal with, so he's in a really tough situation.
I know, but I mean, he obviously, you know, this is, Han wanted to stay. I mean, he apparently could have gotten other jobs before, and he...
Oh yeah, he turned down, I think, like the Cardinals, I mean, not jobs, but I mean, he turned down offers to work for the Cardinals and some other team that is now on a huge analytic bend. It might be the Astros. But yeah, he was like, thanks, but no thanks. Do you think it's because he's local?
You know, I'm not going to pretend to know. I mean, it could just be like seeing the insane job security you get in this organization.
Yeah, if I'm on Jerry's good side, I'm...
Yeah, like I can light this team on fire for like 8 years in a row and he just won't care as long as I'm not spending too much money. So
yeah, just don't light the money on fire. You're good.
Yeah, it's like, that's just... And, you know, that goes for all of you listening out there. Just don't do it.
Save your money.
And one day you too can be Jerry Reinsdorf. Should we call it?
Yeah, I think we should about wrap it up.
I think what Oregon Trail ailment fell to James before we got to the finish line?
James got dysentery.
Yeah, I was going to go with snake bite, but, you know, poop jokes are really strong.
Yeah, I think it works, especially for the White Sox.
I'm
kind of puts a bow on the whole thing here.
Yeah, I guess just like before we go, I mean, like, I was actually starting to talk myself into thinking the organization is going to be better than we've seen in a while, or the team's going to be better than we've seen in a while this year. And then James rattled off a list of like parts of the team that are just being like held together with like toothpicks and chewing gum. I started to get really worried again. But
James is very good at dashing my dreams. I think he makes a sport of it.
I just think that on offense, that options like 3 through 5 are looking like, yeah, the back end is still really rough, but options 3 through 5 are stronger than they were in the last few years. And there's like areas where they've made big defensive improvements. And I think there's more margin for error than there has been.
The AL is a really weird place, as it was last year. And I mentioned it before, the White Sox had a glimmer of hope post All-Star break last year. Like, there was a chance they could still be in it, and they were awful.
Yeah, like, you put Todd Frazier on that team last year, and that's, like, they're right there, so.
Yeah, I think there's a good chance, and there's a lot of that, like, such and such has to break right, but sometimes shit breaks right. It can't always break wrong, you know what I mean?
Yeah, and like, you have, I'm just thinking about it in terms of, like, zoom out, and last year, for most of the season, you had 2+ bats. Melky was okay, and the rest was a disaster. And you know, this year, like, okay, well, you have Frazier, you have Laurie, and you know, you might have, like, Austin Jackson is like a good defensive center fielder who might hit a little bit. You know, like, you have more just like competence filling out the middle of the roster. Like, roster spots 10 through 18 or 8 through 14 are just better.
A little less stars and scrubs, or a little same stars, a little less scrubs, I guess would be a better way to put it.
I like it. So, Avila might fall apart. Rollins might fall apart, but that's, you know, very few teams are set 1 through 25. So,
no, absolutely.
So there you go. Happy to be speaking to you again in the podcast forum.
And you as well. Have a good evening.
Have a lovely evening, sir.
Bye, Dad James.
James is the worst.